Philippe Sands. Philippe, if you need introduction, is a prominent London barrister. He's a professor of law at University College London. His remarkable run of cases before international courts, Augusto Pinochet, among the people that he has crossed swords with in the Congo, Yugoslavia, Rwanda, an extraordinary record. He's also a cracking writer. Huge plaudits for East West Street, a family memoir that intersected with the story of the Jewish legal minds who came up with this idea of human rights law, of crimes against humanity at the Nuremberg trials. Now, that was followed by a film, My Nazi Legacy, What My Fathers Did. And that film featured a bloke called Horst Wächter and Nicholas Frank. Now, they were sons of prominent Nazis. Remember those names, because Philippe and Horst became friends. And this is the beginning of Sands' latest book, The Rat Lines, Love, Lies and Justice on the Trail of a Nazi Fugitive. Now, Horst granted Philippe access to Horst's mother's personal diaries, photographs, letters. This is an attempt by this man to piece together his father's life. And what a life. Horst's father, Otto von Wächter, was an SS Gruppenführer, just a rank below Heinrich Himmler. At the end of the war, Otto was indicted for mass murder, hundreds of thousands of Jews and Poles, and he vanished. 3 years in hiding in the Austrian Alps before he's made his way to Rome, being taken in by a Vatican bishop bound for Argentina, but he never lived that long. There's a mystery in that, which we'll explore. And here's another. In spite of much evidence to the contrary, his son, Horst, still believes that his father was a good man. Philippe Sands, welcome.
It's incredibly nice to be back with you. I think it's about once every 5 years, isn't it? And every conversation sticks in my mind. I love being on with you.
Well, there's the other chap as well, possibly not me, so let's hope this one measures up. There is so much story to tell here, but I wonder if it all ends as something salutary, as a warning about the plausibility of evil, or perhaps capacity to rationalise evil.
I don't know what I take away from this story. As you said, I came to get to know Horst in about 2011, so it's been about 10 years. Halfway through our friendship, relationship, call it what you will, he suddenly offered to give me his mother's entire archive, as you said, and I dove into that and just discovered a remarkable story. The beating heart, I think, of this story is actually Mrs. Wächter. Mm. Charlotte, Horst's mother, who married Otto in 1932 and lived with him through the glory days. He then disappears off the face of the earth. And she basically looks after him while he's hiding and helps him get to Rome, and he's hoping to get to Argentina. And so, curiously, it's a love story. Otto Wächter did monstrous things. He was helped by his wife. And I think what interested me was the sense of humanity. These people were not just monsters. They were also regular folk, mothers, fathers, lovers, parents, whatever. And they got on with daily life. And it's that juxtaposition between the horror and the mundanity that I think is so fascinating for me, at least, anyway.
Isn't that true of any monster? I mean, even Hitler put his pants on one leg at a time. I mean, they are all, at essence, some form of human with human impulses and relationships.
I think that's absolutely right. In East West Street, I was very careful not to call or characterize Hans Frank, who had been Adolf Hitler's personal lawyer for 5 years. I didn't call him a monster. He did monstrous and terrible things, but there was another side to him. And I think the key for me is trying to understand why it is that highly intelligent, highly educated, highly cultured people can get involved in terrible things. And of course, it raises the question, could I do it? Could we do it? What stops us from crossing those lines?
But I sense you here making the lawyer's distinction between the person and the act. And many listening would probably say, but if you did monstrous things, you are therefore a monster.
You know, you're right in this sense. I have a courtroom life, and so I spend a lot of time listening to good people and not such good people, and you work out that things are never quite black and white. In December, I found myself in the extraordinary situation. I was doing a case against Myanmar at the International Court on the treatment of the Rohingya. And of course, Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel Prize winner, was opposite me, sitting no more than 3 feet from me. And she addressed the court. And she's a wonderful and eloquent speaker. But she was, in my submission, defending the indefensible. And yet here was a human being with two different sides to her. How could you explain that? And I think that's the human fascination, is what causes people to cross those lines. And of course, armed with Charlotte Wächter's extraordinary archive, we're able for the first time, I think it's a unique collection, to trace the entire life of a top Nazi family. I mean, when in 1938 the Nazis occupied Austria, Wächter was there, and they stood on the balcony of the Heldenplatz, as she writes in her diary, 1 meter from Adolf Hitler. So they were right there, and that gives you a unique insight, I think.
Mein Kampf, I think, was a touching courtship gift.
Indeed. What do you give the man you love? And what do you inscribe? Actually, Dear Horst has two copies, or had two copies, of Mein Kampf. When he was born, his godfather was named as a man called Arthur Seyss Inquart. The historians amongst your many listeners will know that he was the awful governor of Nazi-occupied Holland, who was hanged in the famous Nuremberg trial. So when Dear Horst was born in 1939, Arthur Seyss Inquart gave him a copy of Mein Kampf, but that's not the one that I saw the first time I ever visited Horst Schloss. I put my hand into the bookshelf, took out a book with a black cover, opened it, and it was a gift, 1944, July the 7th, from Heinrich Himmler, birthday wishes to Otto Wächter. That was a bit of a shock, I have to say.
That's quite a moment. Let's flesh this out a little, the story of Otto Wächter. Now, a deputy to Hans Frank, who was the governor general in Poland, now he was hung in Nuremberg, 4 million souls on his record. Otto was indicted for mass murder, escaped by escaping. And his son, as you're saying, still denies, his son Horst, that his father engaged in criminal activity. I mean, there's a strong circumstantial case building around Otto.
Yeah, I think that's right. I want to be very clear. I do not think that Horst, the son, is a Nazi apologist, and he's certainly not a Nazi. He wants to find the good in his father, is the way he puts it to me. And that is difficult to do when your dad was the man who in Vienna in 1938 and 39 removed all Jews from public office, including, most appallingly, his own teachers at university. And as a university teacher, I can imagine some of my students sometimes taking aim at me, but actually removing me from my job and leading me to my death seems a little excessive. He then becomes governor of Krakow, where he builds the famous Krakow ghetto, and he then becomes governor of Galicia, based in Lemberg, where he is in charge when 500,000 or more people are killed. So he is indicted for mass murder. The Soviets head west. They occupy the lands. He escapes. He ends up in Italy. And he ends up in hiding on VE Day, which is about to be marked, of course, in Australia, as in many other countries at the end of this week. He disappears off the face of the earth. And there comes the heart of the mystery of the book. What happened to him? When I first met Horst, I never really focused on that side of the story. All I knew was that his dad had died in 1949 in mysterious circumstances in Rome, but I never asked any questions.
But this is huge to Horst, because Horst insists that he met with foul play.
Well, so I meet Horst in 2011. For 5 years, we never talk about the end of his dad's life. It's only in 2015, 2016 that I chance across a document and begin to open the gate to this incredible act of disappearance. He hides in the Austrian Alps for 3.5 years. Amazingly, in 2017, I meet the guy who hid him, who was then a young SS soldier, who by the time I met him in 2017, he was 92 years old, but he told me the whole story. It was extraordinary. And Otto then gets to Rome, and he's hidden by a bishop, Alois Hudal, who's not just any bishop, he is the Austrian bishop, who helped people like Klaus Barbie and Mengele and others escape along the thing that is known as the rat line, the path to Argentina. But on a weekend in July 49, Otto goes to visit an old comrade. In the diaries and the letters, he never mentions the name. All he says is he was married to an Italian and he had a four-week-old daughter. And so we spent 3 years tracking down the identity of that person, which we worked out eventually. It took some time. And Horst believes that that man, who turned out to be an American spy and a former SS officer who was himself indicted for mass murder, had in some way poisoned his father. So the latter part of the book becomes a sort of detective story. And that brings us, curiously, into the world of coronavirus, because this was 2 years ago. I retained... I retained the assistance of the professor of immunology at UCL and at my local hospital, the Royal Free, in North London, which some of your listeners will know, a wonderful Italian called Professor Massimo Pinzani. And he takes me through all the symptoms and we work out what Otto Wächter died of. 2 years later, of course, he's one of the country's leading experts on coronavirus. And he happily advises our family on what we should and should not do.
I'm stuck on this idea of a Nazi escape route, which involves high-ranking members of the Catholic Church. How does that work?
Well, hold your horses. I want to be very careful here because I don't want to give too much away. It does... it's a bit of a detective story. I mean, as some of you will know, John le Carré appears in the book because he becomes my advisor on the Cold War and on espionage, because this is a book about the Cold War and espionage. Basically, Otto Wächter arrives in Rome on the 29th of April 1949, helped by a religious gentleman, unnamed, and a gentleman called Giovanni or Bauer, who is also never named, that's a false name. And what Otto Wächter doesn't realize, but what we managed to uncover, is that he stumbled into the most unbelievable espionage story involving an alliance between Vatican bishops, Italian fascists, former SS officers, and the British and American armed forces, all of whom are allied against the Soviets. I must say, I don't know if there were any Australians involved, but it wouldn't surprise me if we dug deep enough, we might find one.
I'm expecting Steven Spielberg, actually more likely than the Australians.
Well, you know, it's funny, there's no Australians, but I did a radio show a couple of weeks ago with Kim Hill in New Zealand, and someone rang in, it was extraordinary, whose dad was a New Zealand Brigadier General in later life, but who earlier was a New Zealand POW who escaped in 1944 and who was saved by the Austrian bishop who helped Otto Wächter. So it's a very small and strange world. Nothing is ever quite what it seems.
Let's walk back to this idea, Philippe Sands, of complicity and the facilitation of appalling deeds. And I think you argue that Horst, as much as he is defending his father, is perhaps even more defending his mother, which then takes us to that. I mean, it's a difficult notion, but the way in which partners of evildoers are complicit in that evil, a sort of it's not quite a Lady Macbeth, but perhaps something less active, but nonetheless supportive.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Charlotte Wächter. Born in 1908, a difficult young woman, she is sent off by her parents to a girls' boarding school in Eastbourne, southern England, in 1925. Her headmistress, unbelievably, you couldn't invent it, is a lady called Ida Foley, who is the sister of Arthur Conan Doyle, the inventor of Sherlock Holmes. She loves the British. She thinks the British are even more nationalistic than the Germans. She becomes a designer of fabrics, high quality. And then she meets Otto Wächter in 1929. They marry. And of course, he's off doing his business, work, and multiple affairs. To give you a sense of Charlotte Wächter, in 1936, she discovers he's having an affair with a young German lady called Trauter. When she falls pregnant a year later and delivers then their first daughter, to get her back on her husband. She calls the new child Tauta. That should teach you a lesson, she tells her husband. So it gives you a sense for her. A year after that, in 1938, they are in Vienna when Hitler arrives, standing with Vienna. They're on the balcony with him in the Heldenplatz. After the event, they come down the great marble staircase. And she writes this out in full. It got her words, not my invention. At the foot of the staircase, she says to him, "So, dear Otto, what are you going to do next?" And he says, "Well, I've got two options. I can carry on life as a lawyer and make plenty of money, or I can accept a job in government service. Take the public office," she says. And, of course, they live the life of Riley. She acquires properties and Mercedes and artwork. She becomes fabulously wealthy. And she has bought into it. And I think it has to be said, she is deeply complicit. At the very least, she's an enabler. But I'd say I'd go beyond that. She was a knowing and willing participant in the whole thing. She knew everything that was going on.
And possibly a preserver of his legacy. And it's Horst that introduces you to the papers that his mother had kept and gives you tremendous access to that story. But how much do you think Charlotta had massaged that archive before your arrival?
Well, I took the view that she had filleted some bits, but not much. So you literally could not invent. Let me just give you a couple of brief anecdotes. Her husband dies in 49. He is buried in Italy. She attends the funeral. 10 years later, Bishop Hudal gets in touch with her and says, "Oh, I forgot to tell you that when your husband passed away in my arms at the Santo Spirito Hospital, he said he'd like to be buried in the homeland in Austria. Come and get him." So she exhumes him illegally, brings him back to Austria and buries him in the garden of her house, which is a school for German in Salzburg. When I first broadcast the podcast, which is called The Ratline, which came out a couple of years ago, a couple of the students who had been at that school in the 60s got in touch saying they had no idea that she had buried the husband, dear Otto, in the garden of House Wartenberg. So she was a fairly remarkable character. 10 years after that, in the 70s, she decides to retrace her husband's life, and she goes around interviewing lots of his old comrades. And she records on those old cassette tapes. You'll remember them, I'll remember them, although our kids won't remember
indeed.
Them. And Horst gives me 14 cassette tapes where she's interviewing his old comrades. It's unbelievable. And there's one with a journalist called Melita Wiedemann. They meet in the cafe of the Four Seasons Hotel in Munich. You can hear them raising a glass to the good old days. "I was a real Nazi," says Charlotta. "So was I," says Melita Wiedemann. "Still am," says Charlotta. That's 1977. So a true believer to the end of her life, it could be said. Not a delightful person, but a real character.
And Horst, just in closing, Philippe, your sort of abiding sense of him and his thoughts on his father?
I try to be generous. Horst was born in 1939, and there was a moment when I met him, you referred to a documentary. He described his birthday party in April 1945. He was 6 years old. And as he described the world collapsing in April 45, just before what became VE Day, as I was interviewing him, he started to weep. And I understood in that moment that he is damaged by what happened. He has spent the rest of his life trying to reconstitute and explain his childhood, his relationship to his mother and his father. He's a decent person. He's a damaged person. I remain very fond of him and curiously quite protective of him, but I don't share his view of his father or of his mother. They were dreadful people. They did dreadful things. And of course, they did dreadful things to my grandfather's family. It's a very personal story because Otto Wächter, in effect, was responsible for the extermination of my grandfather's entire family.
An extraordinarily complex and vastly intersectional piece. And Philippe, I mean, the important thing about Horst, the sins of the father, and it is important to empathise with someone who must have struggled with that remarkable and sad legacy. You must have been compelled to produce this book, and we thank you for walking us through just some of it this evening. Philippe, thank you.
Thank you so much. Hope to speak to you soon. Bye.
Philippe Sands, and the book in question is The Rat Lines, is published in this country by Hachette. There's a lockdown read for you.